There was more pressure on our hospitals as extra staff were brought into Belfast's largest emergency department to deal with the number of people seeking treatment on Sunday and Monday. The Belfast Health Trust triggered escalation plans. Now, that also included additional beds being opened at the Royal Victoria Hospital, and figures released to the BBC, more than 100 people were waiting in NE at one point and about 30 others were on trolleys. Our reporter Lisa McAllister was talking to patients and relatives.
My son brought me in, and the waiting room was absolutely packed out. The room where all the trolleys and all are and all the cubicles was absolutely full. The nurses, the doctors were running here, there and everywhere. They were brilliant. Absolutely fantastic, but they are worked like dogs. It's nearly old treatment. That's one of the ways I'd describe it.
When you arrived here with your son tonight, were you shocked?
I came here about 3 o'clock today, and it's been the same ever since. Ambulances were arriving.
You were urgent, so you got seen fairly quickly, but were there others who you would have thought would have been waiting longer?
I would say there was people waiting a lot longer than I was. You could see frustration in the waiting room. I felt like I shouldn't have been taken so quickly in some ways, because when I looked around me, you know, it was heartbreaking. And I blame the so-called government we have at Stormont for the chaos, absolute chaos. The staff in the Royal Hospital today saved lives.
You came down to A&E last night, and what did you see?
A battlefield, absolutely cut through casually. And it was like a battlefield inside. There was trolleys, people were everywhere. And then I come out into the waiting area and it was like standing room only. And it was awful. Never seen nothing like it before in my life. And staff were running everywhere. They're just understaffed. They definitely need more staff in it.
You said to me earlier you'd like to see Edwin Poots come down and spend a day here.
Oh, he should come down and sit and see what's exactly going on, because they definitely need more staff in it. People are waiting. I met a man last night and he waited 12 hours to be seen by a doctor. 12 hours.
You came in the ambulance, what day was that then?
Tuesday.
And what time did you get to A&E at?
2 o'clock in the day, wasn't it? Aye. And then I didn't get brought up to bed till after 3 in the morning.
So you had 12 hours essentially waiting to be seen and then on a trolley?
Aye.
What did you think about how the situation's managed? Were there just too many people and too little staff?
Yep, damn. It was chocker block. It was really chocker block. It was terrible. I had a stroke, actually. Something terrible it was. So I was never going to stay in bed.
That's Lisa McAllister, who was up there last night. Sinn Féin's Maeve McLaughlin is chair of the health committee. Why is this happening, Maeve? Do we know what on earth is going on?
Well, I think there's a combination of factors. I think increasingly, Stephen, we're being told that, you know, this isn't just an issue about our emergency care. This is a whole system approach that's needed in terms of our hospital provision. But certainly it would seem that the closure of other A&Es, the reduction in hours in places like Down, the impact of the city hospital as well, all of that is putting an increasing burden on staff. And it has been identified, and it is in the public arena, and yourselves and others have highlighted this, they are under intolerable pressure. But it's happening too often. And, you know, whilst we have, in my view, the minister pushed to a position where he had to announce a review, we won't have the findings of that review until June or July. There clearly needs to be interim measures. And, you know, there is a consistent message that comes from health professionals, from unions, from members of the public, from myself, from the health committee. We need to staff up and we need to stop closing beds.
Yeah, we did ask the health minister to come on this morning. He's not coming on. We also asked Dr. Tony Stevens, the head of medical services at the Royal, to come on. He's not available. We asked John Compton to come on. He's not available. The minister, though, says that he does recognise that there are there is always room for improvement, and that all of these concerns are being well documented. That's what he's basically saying there.
Well, I mean, again, you know, we have to trace back the fact that in January when we had the major incident, and thankfully we didn't have a situation last night where we had to call a major incident, but there was escalation measures put in place. I've been told this morning from the Minister's office that there's 30 patients in total now in the ward, that there's one 12-hour breach, there's 16 patients in trolleys, and that the staff and the trust are confident, these are the words that I'm given, confident that they're able to cope. But we listened to, you know, staff, employees, and indeed the union last night saying, this has just become an irregular occurrence. This is something now that's happening maybe once a week. So there is clearly a flaw in the system, and it's not, in my view, good enough to say we are getting reports. We need to put, you know, we need to put interim measures in place, and that, in my view, is clearly in and around staffing measures, workforce management, and increase in staff, particularly in and around the Royal, so we can deal with this increase in demand.
But this is a problem for the whole of Stormont, isn't it? Not just the DUP health minister. What's your party doing to come up with solutions for this?
Well, I mean, you will know.
Have you been on the ground up there?
I'm very well aware that we have made the recommendations and in support of the College of Emergency Medicine in terms of the 5 and 6 proposals that they have given to the Minister. You do know as well as I do, Stephen, that the Department of Health and the Minister for Health are ultimately responsible for the implementation of their policy. What we can do and what we are actively doing and will continue to do is make sure and make the demand on behalf of the requirements in the health service to currently review and act in terms of that policy. But the buck absolutely stopped in relation to this department with the Minister for Health.
But you're chair of the Health Committee. When's the last time you were on the ground in the Royal having a look?
Well, absolutely. We've actually just as of last week
When's the last time you were on the ground having a look at the NE?
Well, I have been on the ground on a number of A&Es and I have done a number of on and out.
Have you been in the Royal?
Because it's across A&Es, Stephen, if you would just let me finish on this, because it is very important. We need to be very clear that we are not putting staff under any more pressure than they're already under.
I know, but
unanimously across the committee last week, we agreed that we want to do a visit, an announced visit, or an unannounced visit, whatever suits people at this stage, to the Royal to get the view on the ground. And I will make this point, Stephen. You know, I'm not a health professional.
Yeah.
I am not a health
But you're chair of the Health Committee, and there is a problem at the NE and the Royal.
Neither are the MLEs that are sitting around the table.
I understand
what
that.
What it is our job to do, sorry, Stephen, what it is our job to do is track and monitor and hold to account the Minister in terms of his current policies. His current policies in relation to transforming your care with a very clear focus on emergency care isn't working for the people.
But as far as I know, the Minister has been up there. Have you been in the Royal in the last year?
I haven't been in the Royal in the last year, no.
Do you not think you should go up and pay a visit and speak to the staff and
well,
actually hear from them on the ground?
With the staff, Stephen. I have been engaging directly with the staff. You know, and I know that the former chair, and bear in mind, Stephen, I'm in this position just less than 6 months, but I know that the former chair, Sue Ramsay, and indeed I think the deputy chair, had a number of unannounced visits to the staff. And this isn't, Stephen, I think, you know, don't be trying to take me down a particular road on this. I do not have the technical or medical solutions to this issue. What my role is, and my role will continue to be, is to say to the Minister, there is something seriously flawed in this system that is resulting in up to 30 people in trolleys last night again, and resulting in major escalation systems having to be put in place, and in resulting in staff being intolerable pressure.
Well,
we continue to engage with staff, and we will do that.
The Ulster Unionist Party have called for the Minister to resign. What's Sinn Féin's view?
Well, and clearly the minister has a big heavy lift to do, in my view, to ensure that there's public confidence in his decisions and his offices and departments' ability to deliver. That, however, Stephen, is, you know, the appointment of ministers as well, you know, is an issue for individual political parties. So that's something that the DUP need to work out. But, you know, we're very clear in saying that right throughout this process, and in particular, I could name 5 or 6 big key strategic pieces within the health over the last 5 or 6 months that he has failed the public confidence. So there is clearly a heavy lift on behalf of Minister Pitt to say that he can build the confidence in the delivery of health provision for all.
Just while you're on, just finally, our top story today, Gerry Kelly finding the police.
I'm sure that you would agree, and I'm not on particularly to talk about Gerry Kelly's case, but I would make this point, and I'm sure that you would agree with it, that every resident, every citizen has access to courts in whatever way they decide to proceed. So, you know, Gerry Kelly, like anyone else, is quite entitled to access court proceedings if that is the case.
Was he badly injured?
But as I said, Stephen, I'm not on to talk about Gerry
Kelly. Was he badly injured? Was he hurt?
I've made my point, Stephen, and I want to leave it at that. I've been very clear with you. I think that Gerry, as in any other citizen...
psychologically traumatised by that Land Rover, was he?
...of Ireland are completely, completely entitled to access court proceedings as they wish.
I'm just trying to ascertain what actual harm he's going to say he merits money for, because this would be taxpayers' money.
Let the courts decide that.
Yeah, but it would be taxpayers' money. Is he not sleeping at night because of that Land Rover?
I've made this very clear now, and I think you're trying to take me into a particular issue that I'm not on to discuss, and I've been very perfectly clear with you. I'm on to talk about the emergency crisis. That's what people want to hear in relation to this interview and what we're doing about it, and I've been very clear on that, and I want to leave that issue there.
Okay, Maeve, thank you very much indeed. Here's the number, 08459-555-678. The text, 81771. The email, nolan@bbc.co.uk. If you're following us on Twitter, I think we're very close now to our 80,000th member of our Twitter club. Basically, we all have a conversation during and after the show now on Twitter every day. At Stephen Nolan on Twitter. The news comes next. It's 9:34.
Good morning, Stephen. The Northern Ireland Audit Office says it's disturbed at the high level of pupils who miss weeks of schooling. Out of 300,000 schoolchildren here, 20,000 are missing at least 6 weeks of lessons each year. The BBC has learned that Ulster Bank has drastically cut its sponsorship funding for the Belfast Festival at Queen's. Instead of its annual payment of more than £300,000, the bank will sponsor just a third of that. And the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Harriet Harman, has expressed regret that a civil rights organisation for which she worked in the 1970s and 80s had links with a paedophile campaign group. A row's broken out between the politician and the Daily Mail newspaper, which reported the association between the National Council for Civil Liberties and the Paedophile Information Exchange. That's all for the moment. More from me at 10.
Right, Ray Rafferty is from the Union Unison. Morning to you, Ray.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Ray. What I'm trying to understand is what's actually happening in NE that they can't sort. And I'm not having to go at the doctors or the nurses in any way, but systemically, is there something flawed?
There is indeed. NE is the gateway to the health service. And as such, it's the point of initial treatment and then admission into the hospital. Recently, over this last winter, there has been an inability to admit patients effectively to the system, and therefore they've been racked and stacked in trolleys in ED, which has caused major problems because the nursing staff, the medical staff there, end up doing two jobs. One, treating the patients coming in, and secondly, acting as a ward for patients who cannot be admitted into the rest of the hospital but need to be. The adverse outcome is the serious adverse impact that has on patients, patient safety, the quality of treatment that they can receive, but more importantly, the long-term stress that it has on the staff within ED. At the end of the day, we need to protect those staff. They provide a vital service. If they're not there, what's going to happen to the patients?
What do you think needs to happen?
The first thing that needs to happen is there needs to be more beds within the system in the short term to facilitate the number of admissions of seriously ill patients, especially over the winter period. And then there needs to be a systematic review of the services provided, how it's done, where it's done.
And where are we getting the more beds from? Like, are you calling for the city to be opened again, the NE there to be opened again, or what?
Over the last 5 years, there's been 500 beds closed in the Belfast Trust. Over the last 2 years, there's been in excess of 100, and over the next year, it's planned that 167 more beds will close. We cannot afford for those beds to close. In fact, we need more beds open to actually facilitate the needs of the patients in the short term. Now, in the long term, there needs to be a systems overhaul and a totally radical approach as to how the health service is delivered for the patients in Northern Ireland.
And how many more beds did you say is to close in the future?
167 within the Belfast Trust over the next financial year.
Over the next year?
Yeah.
Another 167?
Yes.
And at times already now, when those 167 beds are still open, we have bottlenecks.
Yes.
So what's going to happen when those beds close?
That's exactly the question that I would be asking you, because at the minute we're in crisis. We have a crisis every day.
And which departments are those beds in that are going to close?
That's going to be across the board in all departments. There is cost savings that need to be met because of the financial restraints put on by the Health Minister. And whenever that occurs, every department will suffer. And at the end of the day, it's the patients using those beds, needing those facilities, needing the treatment that won't be able to get it.
Is this 167 beds in the Royal, or just the Royal, or across the Belfast Trust?
Belfast Trust.
Okay. All right. That's really interesting, Ray. Thank you for that. Morning to you.